This is 1A. I'm Joshua Johnson in Washington. Here's a name you should know. Tom Hoffler. He was a Republican strategist who specialized on redistricting. Nearly 20 years ago, Tom Hoffler moderated a panel discussion called Congressional Representation and the Census.
It's my job to advise Republican stakeholders in the redistricting question on how they can maneuver through these thickets and keep their plan intact. So if they make a deal, it sticks. It doesn't get overturned by a court.
We're still debating how to draw these districts to make sure all voters are represented fairly and have an equal say. When they're drawn to protect or change political power, many of us call it gerrymandering.
Unfortunately, I think gerrymandering is with us, at least in the immediate future.
And Tom Hoffler was a big part of that, helping redraw maps in North Carolina, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, and elsewhere. That helped the Republican Party take back Congress in 2010 and win a 33-seat House majority in 2012, despite getting fewer votes than the Democrats. Tom Hoffler died last year at age 75. His New York Times obituary called him the Michelangelo of the modern gerrymander. But what does that have to do with the census? Well, documents from his personal hard drives show that he studied the political ramifications of asking census takers whether or not they were American citizens. And his theory has reshaped the argument against this question in time for the Supreme Court to rule on it this month. Opponents argue that it will discriminate against minorities and immigrants. Joining us from New England Public Radio in Springfield, Massachusetts, is David Daley, a senior fellow at the voting rights group Fair Vote. He is the author of a book whose title contains an obscenity essentially called Rat Effed, Why Your Vote Doesn't Count. Dave, welcome back to 1A.
Thanks for having me.
And in New York is NPR's Hansi Lo Wong, who covers the census. Hansi, welcome.
Thank you.
We also welcome your questions and thoughts, so email us 1a@wamu.org, especially if you feel like this citizenship question directly applies to or affects you. We'd love to hear from you. You can also comment on our Facebook page or tweet us at 1A. I should note that we did invite the Census Bureau to join us. It declined but sent a statement, which I'll read momentarily. Dave, let me start with you. What is the citizenship question, actually?
Well, sure. The citizenship question has not been asked on the U.S. Census for, you know, many decades now. You'd have to go back to the 1950s in order to, you know, really find this on the long form of the census. And essentially, it would be asking Americans whether or not they are U.S. citizens. That is not supposed to actually matter. The goal of the census is to count every individual in the nation.
Now, what is your sense of how this is tied to Tom Hoffler? Anything more than what I described at the top?
I think that's exactly right. So in 2015, Hoffler is hired by a conservative billionaire. His name is Paul Singer. And Singer wants him to assess the impact of drawing state legislative maps around the country that are not based on total population, the way that most maps are right now, but on voting age American citizens. And what he's deciding to do is whether or not he ought to finance a legal challenge that would, you know, fundamentally challenge the constitutional basis for drawing lines based on total population rather than a voting age citizen population. And Hoffler looks at the state of Texas, and he concludes, quote, that it would be advantageous to Republicans and non-Hispanic whites, and that it would dilute the political power of state Hispanics if you were able to draw these maps based on voting age American citizens. Except he says, I can't exactly prove it without all of the data. And so what Hoffler says is, I need this question to be on the census in order for us to really be able to ascertain what can be done here.
Now, just to be clear on what Tom Hoffler found, was he saying that if a party asked this question, that it would be advantageous to them? Or was he saying that this question was inherently advantageous to Republicans?
He believes that this question would be inherently advantageous to Republicans, yes. That it would dilute the political power of populations within states like Texas that were more likely to vote Democratic. If you could simply not count them for the purposes of redistricting, you would, in order to draw districts that were of equal population, you would have to essentially increase the size of Democratic districts, and you would be able to increase the power of more rural parts of Texas at the expense of urban areas.
Now, these files were on Hoffler's personal private hard drive. Tell us how they became public.
It's an amazing story, and I play a small part in it. The funny and deeply ironic thing about this is Tom Hoffler was an intensely private person. So and very, very aware of computer security, and a fanatic about keeping things safe and keeping these kinds of files out of the court system. So the fact that all of this now has been found after his death, is certainly ironic. So Hoffler dies last summer, and he was a deeply consequential in the last round of redistricting, but he had largely retired to North Carolina. He'd been ill. No one exactly knew what he had been up to other than consulting on some of the North Carolina maps and the redraws later in this decade. So Hoffler's daughter is at a Common Cause conference in North Carolina that I was speaking at, and I mentioned that, you know, what a treasure trove that there must be of documents on Hoffler's computer. I had no idea that his daughter was actually in the room at the time. And his daughter, as a part of settling his estate, goes to Common Cause and says, "Are you interested in this? I need legal help." And so she ends up delivering, 75,000 documents from the course of his career to Common Cause that could play a huge role not only now in the census case, but also in all of these gerrymander litigation around the country.
And speaking of that census case, Hansi Lo Wong, let me ask you about that. It's been presented to the Supreme Court. The conservative justices have had lots of questions for the ACLU. Here is a clip of an exchange with Justice Neil Gorsuch about exactly why fewer people complete the census when there's a citizenship question attached.
The length of the form itself may deter those with less means and less time to fill them out. Just as simple as that. And we don't know. And what do we do with the fact that we don't know?
That's Supreme Court Justice Neil Gorsuch speaking during oral arguments for Department of Commerce versus New York, which is better known as the citizenship question case. Hansi, give us a sense of whether the justices seemed receptive to adding the question, at least before this new information about Tom Hoffler came to light.
Well, you know, it's really always hard to speculate what the Supreme Court justices are thinking. But if you were to base it upon, really wanted to do some tea leaf reading and the questions that the justices were asking, many court watchers were saying that it appears as though the conservative justices were ready to allow the Trump administration to add the citizenship question onto the 2020 census. And that could be the ruling. But ultimately, we just don't know. And just to be very clear, the history of the citizenship question is very, very complicated. The last time the census asked a citizenship question of every household in the country was in 1950. However, since then, there has been a citizenship question asked of a sample of households for what's known as the long form, was known as the long form of the census beginning in 1970. There is a citizenship question on a Census Bureau survey known as American Community Survey, which is currently implemented. And this citizenship information is currently used to help enforce part of the Voting Rights Act, which is the Trump administration's reasoning for adding it to a questionnaire that would go out to every household. However, most voting rights experts that you would talk to say that that's not necessary. We already have the necessary citizenship data, they say, to enforce the Voting Rights Act.
And can you clarify that piece a little bit? What does citizenship data have to do with enforcing the Voting Rights Act? How are they linked?
part of the Voting Rights Act is a section that protects against discrimination of racial and language minorities to make sure their voting rights, their voting power isn't being usurped. And one way to test that, to measure that, to prove that in court, is to know in any given voting district, any given community, what exactly, how many voting age citizens there are, how many citizens there are that are eligible to vote, that are 18 or older. And that information is necessary to kind of establish a baseline, to figure out whether or not any minority group, whether they be a racial minority or a language minority, their voting power is being diluted. And so in order to do those calculations, to make that assessment, the government has to have a set of citizenship data. And ever since the Voting Rights Act has been enacted, that's 1965, the Voting Rights Act's enforcement of Section 2 has used an estimate of citizenship, used it from a sample survey, what was part of the Decennial Survey, known as the American Community Survey. It never has used data from every household in the country, who is and who is not a U.S. citizen. And what the Trump administration is proposing here is to get more detailed data.
And these new documents, do they affect the case before the court now, the Tom Hoffler documents?
You know, we just don't know, ultimately. The Supreme Court justices know of these documents and know that there is a hearing on coming up here in New York with a lower court. That's because the plaintiffs in one of the New York-based lawsuits have filed a letter informing the court of these newly revealed documents and of their argument, the plaintiffs are arguing, exactly how this might affect the justices' decision-making process. They're expected to make their ruling by the end of the month. We don't know.
We've heard from the Department of Justice and the Census Bureau. We've got statements to read from them as well as some more of your questions in just a moment. I'm Joshua Johnson, and you're listening to 1A from WAMU and NPR. This is 1A. I'm Joshua Johnson. We're discussing the census, citizenship, and partisan gerrymandering with author David Daley and NPR's Hanzi-La Wong. We'd also love to hear from you, your questions about the 2020 census, including that citizenship question. Comment on our Facebook page, tweet us at 1A, or email 1A@WAMU.org. Want to get into some of the nitty-gritty of how this would work, but I should note, we did invite the census to join us. It declined, but sent a statement. Let me read you the statement in full. Quote, "The Census Bureau conducts the census it is charged with completing. We are laser focused on a complete and accurate count. State and local officials use census counts to redraw boundaries for districts like congressional districts, state legislative districts, and school districts. The Census Bureau does not redraw district lines. The law protects every response to every question." Continuing to read from their statement, quote, "By law, your responses are confidential and cannot be used against you in any way. We are developing a robust communications campaign and working with communities across the country to communicate that responding to the census is safe, easy, and important. It is important for every person in every community to respond." Unquote. That is the statement sent to us from the U.S. Census Bureau. Dave Daley, what's your reaction to that statement?
I think that's a strong statement. It's certainly very, very true. An accurate count matters for absolutely, you know, it matters as far as drawing congressional lines, state lines, local lines. It matters as far as funding formulas for states. It is crucial to have an accurate count. And it is one of the reasons why this question has caused such controversy. Because of the possibility that in the middle of this a very fraught political climate, especially around questions of immigration, you know, could you get an undercount by having this question on the census? But, you know, simply but by having it on the census, do you imperil the trust that is necessary between communities of color and the census in order to get an accurate count that so much is based on for the next decade?
We should also know the Department of Justice has denied that Tom Hoffler had any impact on its decision to add a citizenship question to the census. The Department of Justice wrote in a statement on Friday, quote, "These unfounded allegations are an unfortunate last-ditch effort to derail the Supreme Court's consideration of this case." unquote. Dave, that's also a point we should clarify, is the role of the Department of Justice in this. The narrative between the Census Bureau and the Department of Justice, we should clarify that in terms of who is actually formally requesting the question.
Well, yes, and that's very complicated. And I think that that's also complicated in the statement that they've provided you. So essentially, and Hansi may be able to jump in on this in a more detailed way, but essentially the Department of Justice has been sending letters to the Census Bureau seeking this question to be included. And the trouble with the statement that the Department of Justice gives you is that what has come out in the Hoffler documents is that the letter that the Department of Justice sends to the Census Bureau seeking this question to be included on August 30th of 2017 essentially is word for word from the 2015 memo that Tom Hoffler wrote about the importance of the citizenship question. So the Department of Justice certainly has to answer for that.
Hansi, let's get a little bit more into the technical aspects of how the census works. Remind us exactly what's going to happen next year when the Census Bureau says it is census time.
Well, the census officially starts in January of 2020 in rural Alaska. That's a tradition, and it really gets to the point of the government is really focused on making sure every person in every household is counted. And so it starts in one of the hardest places to count in Alaska, sending out door knockers to remote rural villages, trying to get that count. But most households in the country are going to get a letter in the mail. This is around March, mid-March, right before Census Day, April 1st, which is just really a ceremonial reference day. But around mid-March is when most parts of the country can go either online through a link, return a paper form, or call a 1-800 number and answer these questions for the census. And that information is collected, and you have a few weeks, about a month, to respond yourself per household. And if you don't do that, don't respond yourself as a household, that's when you might start getting additional letters, additional mailings to remind you about it, or even visits from Census Bureau workers coming to your home, door knocking, to make sure that you know that there is a census and that you respond to the questions. It is required by law to respond to all the questions on the 2020 census.
I'm glad you brought that up, because the census is a constitutional requirement, and we got some varying comments from several of you about that. Melissa tweeted, "There is nothing wrong with asking the citizenship question. Voting districts should be drawn based on the number of people who can vote." Ian responded to Melissa, writing, "That's not what the Constitution says, though. It's to count everyone living here." Hansi, what does the Constitution say about the census?
The Constitution says for apportionment purposes, and that's for the determining how many congressional seats each state gets, that is a count of every person living in the country, regardless of immigration status, regardless of citizenship status. And, you know, we can go back into a very complicated history of the census and the Constitution, where at one point enslaved persons were counted as 3/5 of their person. At one point, not all Native Americans were included in the census. But now we're at a point where it is every person living in the country counted for the census. And those numbers determine how many congressional seats and also how many electoral college votes each state gets. We get more complicated is when we look at redistricting, drawing those voting districts at the state and local level. It is unclear whether or not it is legal or not to draw districts just based on citizens who are of voting age. That is a proposal that's been floated at various state governments around the country, and that is an issue that is likely going to be before the Supreme Court. And that is a scenario, however, that only will happen if there is a citizenship question on the 2020 census, which would collect the level of detailed citizenship data the government currently does not have, and it would need to do that. One thing also to keep in mind here is that in addition to approving the addition of a citizenship question on the 2020 census, this is what Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross did. He oversees the Census Bureau. He also approved the collection of government data, existing government records from various agencies. And so the Census Bureau has information from the Department of Homeland Security, the State Department, and is already compiling a data set of who is and who isn't a U.S. citizen. And that's information they could also use to enact these changes to redistricting after 2020.
We asked our listeners whether or not you would answer a question about your citizenship on the census. Nearly everyone, and I mean all but like one or two people who called in, responded like this.
Suleyma from University City, Missouri.
My name is Mary Kay. I'm calling from Monterey, California.
I am a Latina immigrant who came to the United States in 1960 and became a citizen in 1977.
My family came over on the Mayflower, blonde-haired, blue-eyed.
I will not answer any citizenship question on the census.
I find it infuriating and unconstitutional, and I have already decided if it ends up on the questionnaire that I will not answer it.
I don't trust that the Trump administration will not gain access to that information and then use it to further harass and marginalize immigrants and Latinos.
I'm doing that to stand in solidarity with the people that are living here, working hard, paying taxes, contributing to our economy and to our workforce, who live in terror of being deported every day.
Thank you both for sharing your thoughts with us, and thanks to everybody who called in. Dave, I wonder if you could answer a question from Will, who emailed, if the citizenship question is approved for inclusion on the census survey, what will be the consequences for those households who answer all questions except leaving the citizenship question blank?
Well, that's a really good question. I mean, you are legally required to answer every question on the census and to answer those questions accurately. If you do not answer those questions, you could end up with phone calls first, finally with someone knocking on your door to try and fill those questions out. And then there's the possibility of a $100 or even a $500 fine if that gets even further down the line. So it is not necessarily clear to me that you could simply pass on answering that question in solidarity, as some of the listeners suggested, without putting yourself in some kind of peril of further questions from the government leading up to possible fines.
With regards to what the question actually is, Dave, Harley tweeted, please tell your listeners that the proposed citizenship question is not a simple yes or no, but instead a five-item multiple choice question that many people would be unsure how to answer. Hanzi, do we know actually what the text of the question is?
We do. The question asks specifically, is this person a citizen of the United States? And there are five boxes you can choose from. Yes, born in the United States. Yes, born in Puerto Rico, Guam, the U.S. Virgin Islands, or Northern Marianas. Yes, born abroad of U.S. citizen parent or parents. Or yes, U.S. citizen by naturalization, and it asks you to print your year of naturalization. Or no, not a U.S. citizen. This is wording from a citizenship question that's currently asked on the American Community Survey, that annual survey that goes out to about 1 in 38 households around the country. And so this is not new wording. And there are some controversies, obviously. Some people have brought up, why is there a distinction between born in the United States and born in Puerto Rico and other U.S. territories? But it is a very, there are multiple options here. And it does ask for your year of naturalization. And if you're not a U.S. citizen, it does not necessarily ask for your immigration status.
I'm Joshua Johnson. You're listening to 1A. Hanzi, that gets exactly to some of the comments that our listeners have given us, including from Jeremy, who wrote on our Facebook page, the citizenship question can provide little information to the future voting population because the yes or no question does not provide information about how far along the process the immigrant is to becoming a citizen. And I know we've already clarified the yes or no part, but I do take Jeremy's point, Hanzi. I mean, you've got foreigners who are legally in the country, like green card holders, and if we're asking whether someone is a born citizen or a naturalized citizen, there's a lot that could be included in that no answer.
Sure, and that's a question that I've also heard from readers and listeners. It's unclear to me how the Census Bureau is going to deal with that, although, you know, one possible way we can look at this is, again, this is a question, the wording appears on the American Community Survey, a current survey the Census Bureau currently does, and those instructions are asking for a simple yes or no. There is no gray area. So if you are in the process but you are currently not a citizen, for the American Community Survey purposes, it's asking if you are currently a citizen. So we'll see how the Census Bureau interprets this for the 2020 census if this question is included on the forms.
Dave, I wonder if you could answer a question from Chris, who asks, doesn't the census's own research provide evidence that there is a risk of undercounting if the citizenship question is included?
Yes. I mean, I think that there is always, a sense of risk that there can be an undercount, especially if this question is included. I think that what many people fear is that is, in fact, the goal, that if you can have an undercount, and if you are undercounting among communities of color, especially among communities of color in, states like California and New York, what you end up seeing is a redistribution of a political power away from urban areas, away from minority communities, and back towards whiter, rural, perhaps more Republican leading neighborhoods. And so when Hoffler writes that it would be advantageous to Republicans and non-Hispanic whites and that it would dilute the political power of Hispanics to be able to include this question, I think it raises even more concerns among people that perhaps there is a much more partisan intent here than had been originally.
Hansi, I'd love you to answer Richard's question. Richard writes, are you saying that immigrants or illegal immigrants have the right to influence our elections in this country? They are not citizens. So why are we saying that they have a say or should have an effect on the way districts are drawn? Hansi?
The Constitution requires a count of every person living in the country. And the persons does not specify regardless of immigration status or citizenship status. And so it is this is how it's been done since the first census in 1790. And with caveats that enslaved people were counted as 3/5 of a person and not all Native Americans were included in the census. That has changed, obviously, and currently. And I think that's the answer there. I also just want to keep in mind, going back to an earlier question from a listener, the Census Bureau says that if the Trump administration wants to have more detailed citizenship data, wants to have it more detailed than what currently the government has, the way to go about that, to know exactly who is and who isn't a citizen, is not to ask a citizenship question on the 2020 census. Census Bureau researchers recommended against that, said that that would provide less accurate and more expensive data than using existing government records.
Tony tweeted, with the citizenship question, how can they verify the info you provide? Anyone can lie. Hansi?
That's exactly the concern that Census Bureau researchers have brought up, that is why adding a citizenship question on the 2020 census, Census Bureau researchers says, is less accurate than using existing government records. Because if you're asking people to self-report, answering this question, checking off one of these boxes, that's self-reporting. And they've shown, Census Bureau researchers have shown that they looked at American Community Survey responses, that existing government survey asking people to self-report their citizenship status, and they found that about a third of those responses were inaccurate if they were to match it with existing government records from Homeland Security, from comparing it also with other government agency records. And so that is why the Census Bureau's recommendation to Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross, who approved adding this question, they recommended against adding this question and to use existing government records instead.
Yeah, we heard from a number of listeners who kind of were thinking along that line. General Patton tweeted, what's to stop everyone from answering yes to the citizenship question? Wouldn't that render the question moot? And Skip tweeted, if there is a citizenship question on the 2020 census, I would answer, I am Spartacus. I get it, the whole protest thing. I would like to talk a little bit more about the political impact when we get back. Bob in Florida asks, if asking a citizenship question will result in an undercount, which will impact the distribution of federal funds, won't that affect Republican states such as Texas and Florida as much as Democratic states? Why is an undercount resulting from asking a citizenship question seen as a partisan matter, which will benefit Republican states at the expense of Democratic states, when it will actually affect both? Interesting question, Bob. Not sure I'd call Florida a Republican state per se. It is a perfectly purple state in many ways, but I do like the mainstream of your question. What is the real potential fallout from this citizenship question? We'll get to that more as we continue with author Dave Daly and NPR's Hansi Lo Wang, and we'll answer more of your questions as well. Stay close. Back now to our conversation with NPR's Hansi Lo Wang and author David Daly. We'll get in a few more of your questions in just a moment, including comments. Paul wrote on our Facebook page, please explain Hoffler's role, why it was obscured, and why the Washington Post thinks it carried weight in the administration's decision-making process. Dave, I think Paul is referencing a Washington Post op-ed from its editorial board yesterday saying that the Supreme Court cannot ignore the info from Hoffler's hard drives. But what about his role, it being obscured, and why the Post thinks it's got weight now?
Well, nobody knew that Tom Hoffler was involved in the process of trying to argue for a citizenship question to be on the census. And what the documents on the hard drive reveal is not only that Tom was working, you know, very seriously and putting together specific memos for conservative advisors as far as what the potential impact and ramification of a citizenship question would be, but that he was also in regular communication with the Trump transition team and other members of the administration, and that these memos that Hoffler wrote were finding their way almost word for word into Department of Justice's letters that were demanding the addition of a citizenship question, and that these documents reveal, you know, not only that Hoffler was involved, but that his goal appeared to be pushing Republican partisan gain.
I think we should be clear, though, Dave. I mean, The debate over gerrymandering is partly so heated because we don't have a clear constitutional definition of what gerrymandering is. We do have some clear constitutional definitions about other thorny issues. Obscenity. You know, there's Miller versus California from 1973 very clearly and specifically laid out a test for determining if something is obscene. Gerrymandering is not currently ruled as inherently constitutional, hence the case of the Supreme Court. So if it's not currently ruled as inherently unconstitutional, and if Tom Hoffler's research was right, so what? It seems like there's no one to punish or anything to punish them for.
Well, we will see what the Supreme Court rules later this month on these key partisan gerrymandering cases. You certainly now have a choir of lower federal courts that are saying that a partisan gerrymandering is unconstitutional and that there are easy ways for them to measure it and determine when it has gone too far. But I mean, I think what Hoffler's life in so many ways is about, it mirrors the rise and fall of technology in redistricting. Hoffler, you know, back in California in his early days involved in this in the 1970s and 1980s, is quick to understand the possibilities of high-tech computers when it comes to redistricting and the collection of data and how that could give a partisan mapmaker a real advantage in etching enduring lines that last for a long period of time. And he does this in two ways. First, in the 1980s, he sits down with African Americans across the South, and he explains to them that white Republicans and African Americans in the South actually have common cause, that white Democrats have been gerrymandering districts in a way that diluted the voting power of blacks across the South. And he helps provide the technology and the information to black leaders in North Carolina and Alabama, you know, in states across the South that help Republicans flip the South and use the Voting Rights Act as far as the a clause for the addition of majority-minority seats when possible to essentially flip the South from being white Democrats to white Republicans. And then in 2011, after the big Republican wave that takes the state capitals around the country and flips them red, it's Hoffler who trains all of these legislators on how to use data and sophisticated new computer software to draw lines that just do not give back an inch across a decade. And that's what is so different right now, that these gerrymanders are more enduring than they have ever been. And if the court can't come up with a way to regulate them, it's only going to get worse.
Hansi, we've been getting a lot of people commenting on the kind of I am Spartacus method that was brought up earlier. Jacqueline writes, if many of us refuse to answer the citizenship question, those of us who can easily afford to pay the fine, then the data they get from the census on that particular question will be effectively useless. Interesting idea for civil disobedience to thwart the designs of the current administration to sabotage one of the cornerstones of our democratic institutions. Would that work? I mean, I would presume that the people who would oppose answering the question would probably trend more toward the political left. That might leave people more further on the political right, more dogged about making sure that question gets answered. So it might just have a lopsided impact as opposed to no impact at all.
Here's what
we know. Which kind of defeats the purpose of the whole census.
Well, here's what we know. We know that Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross, who approved adding the citizenship question to the 2020 census, again, also approved collecting data, these existing government records from various federal agencies. And so the Census Bureau currently has citizenship data from the Department of Homeland Security, from the State Department, other agencies that they're compiling. So if there were to be, the Census Bureau suspects that these self-responses to a citizenship question are inaccurate, they do have a data set of existing government records of citizenship status. And so that could be used as replacement or as a way to fact check, if you will. It's unclear exactly what the Census Bureau will do with this data that they've been approved to collect. And so that could be a way for the Trump administration to still have this detailed citizenship data that it has requested for. And in terms of whether or not there could be a protest or any organized way to answer this question, again, I think it's important to keep in mind that the federal law says you have to answer every question on the census accurately and completely truthfully. And so there could be a risk of fines, although the caveat there is that they've been rarely enforced in the past.
This has got to be frustrating, Hansi, for the Census Bureau itself. I mean, it has to start printing census forms sooner or later. And if they don't know what the entire question set is on the form, they're just kind of twiddling their thumbs and getting closer to missing that rural Alaska deadline.
They have a lot to do, so I don't think they're twiddling their thumbs. But
Not twiddling. They're probably like, you know, I don't know, biting their thumbnails would be more accurate, I think.
Possibly, yeah. But they have less than a month before this deadline. July 1st is when they say the printing has to start for about 1.5 billion pieces of mail, of questionnaires, paper forms have to start to be printed by July 1st as it's currently budgeted, as it's scheduled for. And yes, they currently have two versions of the 2020 census form ready to go, and they're waiting to tell the printer which one to print. And this is they're waiting to catch a Supreme Court decision to decide which one to go with. In the meantime, yes, there's a lot of preparations underway, and it has stalled a lot of the communication plans and advertising plans in terms of, you know, a lot of local community groups don't know what to tell their constituents, whether or not there is a citizenship question. There's a lot of waiting. There's a lot of fear, a lot of anxiety, and that could all affect the preparations for an accurate count.
By the way, Hansi, I know we've been focusing on this one question. Are there any other significant changes in the 2020 census that are different from the 2010 census that are worth noticing? We've been so laser focused on this question, but is there anything else new about the census next year?
Yes, there's really interesting changes. One with the household relationship question. You know, the census has always asked about how people within a household are related to one another. And one of the new categories for the 2020 census, they're going to allow people who are in relationships to specify whether or not they're in a same-sex relationship or an opposite-sex relationship. So you can say, this person is my same-sex spouse, or this person is a same-sex partner, or opposite-sex spouse, opposite-sex partner. The other change that's interesting is to the race question. Under the categories, if you were to check off the white box or the black box, you're also going to be asked to write in your origins. And the Census Bureau is helping you to understand what they mean by origins by providing examples such as German, French, Jamaican, Nigerian. They're asking for your non-Hispanic origins. And those are going to be a really interesting data set to have people think about. You know, they identify as white and or black. Also, what does that mean specifically for white people? They have never been asked to specify non-Hispanic origins like this in the past.
I'm Joshua Johnson. You're listening to 1A. Joanna writes, as an immigration attorney, I fear that this is just another tool for this administration to go after immigrants, including lawful ones. Someone who indicates falsely on a form that she or he is a U.S. citizen may be barred from naturalizing in the future. I'm sure the administration is well aware of this and will be looking to use the census forms to prevent certain green card holders who fill out the form incorrectly from naturalizing in the future. David, I wonder if you could briefly respond to that, especially because some of our listeners have been asking about that part of the census statement that said your responses are confidential and cannot be used against you in any way.
This data is supposed to be completely confidential, and you're right. It's not able to be used against you in any way, but I think that the question speaks to that, you know, mistrust. And if there is that kind of mistrust, you do run the risk of a significant undercount. It's, you know, it's a very real feeling, a very real concern that the listener mentions.
Bob in Florida writes, if asking a citizenship question will result in an undercount, which will impact the distribution of federal funds, won't that affect Republican states such as Texas and Florida as much as Democratic states? Why is an undercount resulting from asking a citizenship question seen as a partisan matter which will benefit Republican states at the expense of Democratic states when it will actually affect both? David?
It's a really good question. Here's what I would say. If you were to take a look at the current estimates as far as which states are going to gain and lose seats in Congress, right now Texas, Florida, North Carolina, Oregon, and Arizona are expected to gain, and those gains would come at the cost of Alabama, Illinois, Michigan, Minnesota, New York, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Rhode Island, West Virginia. The studies show that if you do an undercount of non-citizens, New York and California lose, and those seats go towards Colorado and Montana. If you only count citizens, you're going to have a loss in California, Texas, Florida, and New York, and the states that gain are Pennsylvania, Louisiana, Missouri, Minnesota, Michigan, Montana. And then if you do this based on voting age citizens, you're going to have California, Texas, and New York lose, and the states that gain seats are Virginia, Pennsylvania, Ohio, Michigan, Missouri, Colorado, Louisiana, Montana. So if you look at this big picture, you can see where the political power flows from and where it flows to, simply by counting in different ways.
Hansi, setting aside how the Hoffler documents could affect this case, could it get anyone in legal trouble? Are there any other kind of ramifications for people related to these documents?
Well, the plaintiffs in one of the New York-based lawsuits led by the American Civil Liberties Union, they're arguing, and this is why there's a hearing in the Manhattan federal court on Wednesday that I'll be attending, they're arguing that there's a Justice Department official as well as an advisor to Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross on census issues that the plaintiffs' attorneys are saying misrepresented or intentionally lied about the testimony to, they say, allegedly to hide the role of Thomas Hoffler in the citizenship question proposal by the Trump administration. And so that is why they wrote why the plaintiffs wrote a letter requesting potential sanctions or other penalties be brought against these Trump administration officials and this consultant for possibly having providing misleading testimony during the trial.
One last question, David. I wanted to ask you this last time we had you on, but just didn't have time. The title of your book contains a naughty word in it. Why'd you pick that one? You knew we couldn't say it on the radio. You know it can't be said in any interview. Is that really the only word that you thought was best to describe the nature of how our votes do or do not count? Did you have to be that naughty?
You know, I think gerrymandering used to be the kind of topic that made people's eyes glaze over. It reminded them of civics class and, you know, falling asleep in it. So we actually, you know, all of those titles were actually tested. We actually sold the book originally as Gerrymandered Nation, and I think I put the marketing department of my publisher to sleep with that title. So we ended up with something that you can't say on the radio, but it certainly gets your attention.
Well, if you think that gerrymandering puts people to sleep, you have not met our audience. They have
Things
been peppering
have
us.
Changed.
They have changed, and our audience has peppered us with questions about gerrymandering and redistricting from day one, and we appreciate the two of you helping answer some more questions today. David Daly is a senior fellow at FairVote. His book is called Rat Effed, Why Your Vote Doesn't Count. David, thanks for talking to us.
Always a pleasure.
And NPR's Hansi Lo Wong, who covers the census. Hansi, thanks for keeping it clean.
You're very welcome.
Remember, you can subscribe to our podcast on the NPR One app or whatever app you'd like. We'd be honored if you'd write us a review. If you're new to podcasting, all the links to listen are online at npr.org/1A. This conversation was produced by Paige Osborne. To learn more about her and the rest of the team, visit the1a.org/staff. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington, distributed by NPR. I'm Joshua Johnson. This is 1A.